Good day, listeners. This is your host, Michael Martins, with the Martins Critical Review, broadcasting this morning from a rather stormy day here in South Central British Columbia. Today's program features the inaugural episode of a new investigative series exploring life and the world beyond COVID. In this series, we will examine what life may be like as the world accelerates towards Agenda 2030 and what every aware and awake citizen of this planet can do to avoid becoming entrained in this trap. We will look at both the physical and the metaphysical reality of what we'll be facing and how to navigate it successfully. Joining us for this important episode is none other than Gareth Eich. Gareth is a truth seeker, a social activist, a rock star, an author, a former international beach football player, and the personality and presenter of Right Now, an uncensored current affairs show on the Iconic Network. The Right Now show airs every Friday at 7 p.m. UK time, where Gareth speaks to guests from around the world on a wide range of subjects. His hard-hitting, uncensored news and current affair programs presents and highlights the people and stories the mainstream media ignores or silences. And of course, I'd be reticent in my introduction if I'd not add that Gareth's father is none other than the prolific author, renegade scholar, and humanitarian David Eich. Gareth, it's a great honor to be able to speak with you today. Thank you so much for your time, and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, mate. It's an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. So I have to ask, you know, as a fellow truth seeker and podcaster, how's your show coming along?
It's good, you know. I feel we're basically a year old now, the show. So at the start, it's kind of like, as you know, you're trying to get guests on, but you've basically got no credit. If you like, no one knows anything about you. And so it's kind of like, you know, we found it quite difficult at first to try and get some of the hard hitting people to come and talk to us. And fortunately, that didn't last that long. And so because the show's gone really well and people have spoken to us, then it's kind of got a little bit more credit out there. And now we have some amazing guests coming to us, which is great because it makes our job a hell of a lot easier. And if we see something happen in the news, you can contact them and say, would you like to come on the Right Now show? And it's often a yes rather than the what, you know, which is great. So I see that as a real positive for us.
Perfect. And certainly, you know, the work that folks like you and I are doing is definitely needed to counterbalance the constant mainstream propaganda engine. So I appreciate the work you're doing. I know it's a tremendous amount of work. So good on you.
Oh yeah. Well, same to you, mate. Yeah, it is some serious propaganda to try and counteract as well. Like I don't pay for a TV license. I don't watch TV. Like, I watch films or whatever, but I don't watch any of the mainstream TV. But a little while ago, I had to take my car in for an MOT. I don't know, is it called an MOT in Canada?
We used to have those, but they've given up.
Oh, right.
Okay. Your car goes in for a safety inspection, essentially.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Every year you have to do that. Apart from during COVID, where it didn't matter. So, like, you know, you can just drive around with faulty brakes and bald tires. It's fine because COVID. But now you've got to do it again. And I went in and I'm sat there in the waiting room and they had this channel on, it's called BBC News 24. So it's just like 24 hour BBC News. And honestly, mate, after about 10 minutes, I was like, no wonder everyone's insane. Like, if they're watching this and they're believing this, then no wonder, you know, no wonder they're crazy because it's incessant propaganda.
Absolutely. So before we get in with the more serious subject matter, and our listeners can get to know you a bit better, perhaps you can share with your listeners your underlying motivations in life and how you transitioned from footballer to rock star and to presently a media personality.
Lost the small town blaggers, if I'm honest. Stumbled into absolutely everything I've ever done in my life. I was working with the Arts Council, actually. So I was a footballer for years. I broke my tib and fib. Leg was flapping around. That was the end of that. And then on the music front, I'd got bored of the falseness of the music industry, if I'm honest with you. And having seen the inside of it, I didn't want really any part of it. And what was really the straw that broke the camel's back was we had recorded an album. Because what my idea was, I didn't want to go to a label, get an advance, and then record an album that they'd never release, but they'd own the rights to it. I'd still be in debt to it. And I've got friends that have been in that boat, and it's just ruined them. So I was like, what I'm going to do, I'm going to find the money, basically, and we're going to record a record. And then so we'll go to the label with the record already in place. So then you only need a marketing budget, and they're not going to give you a marketing budget and then not market it because that would be pointless. So it's kind of like that was my logic anyway. And so we were offered 100 grand as a marketing budget by this organization called Icebreaker, which in the end, I think were actually mentioned in the Panama Papers. But they offered 100 grand based on the fact that I changed my name and disassociated myself with my dad and my family and everything that stood for, basically. Which obviously I refused, and therefore the 100 grand, disappeared into the clouds, and that was the end of it for me, really. I was like, do you know what? If that's what this is about, this is what I'm trying to get into, I don't want any part of it. So I started working more with the Arts Council, which was working with. I live in an area of England called Derbyshire. It's all lots of old coal fields, basically. They're all now, broken up, closed down, and so there's a lot of impoverished areas. There's a lot of poor people, basically. And so we figured, if your parents are worrying how they're going to feed you, they're not going to get you cello lessons, basically. That's just never going to happen. So we then went and took music and art and spoken word and poetry. There was a load of us doing it to these impoverished areas. And I was absolutely loving it, mate. I was loving it. I was literally living my best life. And then COVID hit and all that nonsense. And so all the gigs were cancelled. You couldn't go anywhere. You couldn't do anything. All the Arts Council funding was pulled because there's no money anymore because, it's all gone on nonsense. And so I was just kind of found myself thrust into this, really. And it was like, I've got two kids now, one's 3 and one's 7 months. And so the idea of not fighting doesn't really enter my mind. I think maybe if I was a single guy and I had no dependencies, I'd probably at times look at how stupid people can be. I think, do you know what? I'm going to move off to the Highlands of Scotland. I'm going to let you lot get on with it. But once you've got kids, that changes everything then. So I'm looking at where they want to take the world in terms of basically, even if it's just stops at where it is in China now, with the social credit system and all this nonsense. And it's like, I don't want that life for my kids. And even thinking before COVID, with the critical race theory. And all this gender nonsense and that. I don't want my two kids in school having that either. Like, I don't want my little girl taught that she, because she's a white kid, she's an oppressor. I'm not having that as a parent. That's not happening. And so that's another reason why we do this, really. It's just to try and fight back and alert enough people to what's going on. And it's happening. It's making a difference for sure.
Well, that's, I mean, it's a uphill battle, but every mind that you can turn on is one mind that is no longer captured. And interesting your story. I mean, I've heard similar tales of people's lives, the trajectory completely being altered at the March 20. Just things were moving along, including myself. And part of the reason I've been doing this show early on in the Rose Ike podcast series there, your father had made the statement, kind of a plea to the world, what did you do in 2020 when this was coming down the pipeline? Did you acquiesce or did you stand up? And that was something that I mulled over in my mind for some time, and sort of chose the appropriate action. So it was hopefully many other people are doing the same. And one other question here before I get into the meat of things here, what was it like growing up with your father being who he was? And has there been any solace in terms of these last few years here, where 30 years of his work and predictions have really borne fruit now and proven out his many of his theories?
It's a weird one, really, because I get asked that a lot. What was it like growing up? But for me, it was just normal. Because I don't, I didn't have anyone, another dad, so it's kind of, it was normal. One bit that was strange was obviously he was at the BBC, presenting sports was very popular. So every time you went out, obviously days before camera phones and stuff, people would come up and ask for an autograph, or shake your hand, and blah, blah. And then it went from that to suddenly being pointed at and shouted at and laughed at in the street. And obviously I was only young, so I didn't really, I'm like, what the hell? Like, why is everyone having a go at my dad? I thought everyone liked him. That was strange. And then you kind of, it went on, and it was quite brutal. I'll be honest with you, mate. It wasn't very pleasant. The media were very unpleasant. And kids, man, kids can be evil. So that was nasty. But when it comes to sort of now, it's a weird one because a lot of people have gone. I mean, I'll get it if I go out on the Isle of Wight, where I grew up. If I have a beer, very often people just can't go, and I'll just put a pint down in front of you, and you look, and it'll be someone that was like a total dick. Like a total dick. But they don't apologize because it's a man thing. So they'll just sort of put their hand on your shoulder, tap you, and just walk off. And it's like, right, that's a pint of lager. What that's doing, that's apologizing for about 10 years worth of bullshit. And he's not apologized, but I know he's apologized, and that's fine, whatever. But then you have the other side of it where they double down. So they weren't necessarily attacking what my dad was saying because they thought he was mad or stupid. They were attacking him because he was actually uncovering what they were up to. And so the more credibility he gets where it comes to the COVID situation, well, then what credibility does it have to the other stuff in the past? And so those people double down in attacking, which I find. So it's kind of split two ways, really. He's a bit of a Marmite character.
Either love him
I
or hate
don't,
him.
well, yeah, and I don't think he'd want it any other way, really. You know, that's how I'm the same. I've got a thing in a picture in my kitchen that says I'd rather be one person's shot of whiskey than everyone's cup of tea, and it's the same. And if you speak the truth, you're going to piss people off. It's just the way it is.
That's it. That's it. And certainly that builds character. I mean, if you're living in sort of that wishy-washy, mediocre milieu, you don't really develop any skills or traits. Whereas if you're being challenged and pushed, it forms something different in a man or a woman.
100%. I would never be able to do the things I do now, whether it be, you know, standing up in Trafalgar Square in front of 45,000 people and just doing a rap. Like, I don't know where that came from either. But there's no way I'd be able to do any of that stuff if I hadn't have got all that stick as a kid. Like, no chance. Because I know everyone, I hear it all the time, I don't care what people think. And you're like, you do. You do. Because most people do. And then, but once you get it beaten out of you to such a point that it's actually, I genuinely don't care. Like, I care what my wife thinks, you know, and I care obviously what my friends and the people that I love close to me think, and they're always the first to tell me if I'm being a dick. But in terms of the masses, do you know what I mean? In terms of being popular and being loved, and thinking, do you know what? I better not, even though I know it's true, I better not say that because if I do, someone's going to come at me. Then life's too short for any of that nonsense for me, mate, I think.
So I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I'd love to hear your sort of synopsis of the last 24 months and where you think this is all headed from here.
I think the plan has always been from the beginning to basically implement a Chinese style social credit system, to implement the Great Reset. They're not hiding it as much as people say it's a conspiracy theory. And I've heard it said on radio here, national radio, you know, it's that conspiracy theory. It's like, dude, the guy's literally written a book called COVID-19, The Great Reset. You can buy it on Amazon. It's the worst kept conspiracy theory I've ever heard. You can buy it. It's not a great book, to be honest. But that's the plan. So the last 24 months, I believe, have been about facilitating that. So if you want to create a new normal, you want to create a great reset, and you want people to agree to it, because they have to agree to it, because there's too many of us. You can't bring something in by force against 7 billion people. You've got no chance. You just the maths isn't in your favor. So you need to get them to ask for it. And so the last 24 months and the impending financial crash and everything that's coming off, going to come off the back of that, is going to lead to the fact where people are so desperate and so destroyed and ruined basically financially. That they will ask for whatever it is you're offering to get them the hell out of that situation. And obviously the social credit system will be part of that. You can get your little nuggets of credit to get you through life, but you will only get those nuggets of credit based on you ticking this box and that box and this box. You've got to be a good little worker bee, otherwise you don't eat, basically. And when you say that to people, they think that that's, you know, oh, they won't do that. And I say to them, say, mate, when you had the hurricanes, so in Hurricane Katrina, when people were looking for aid payouts, they had to stipulate that they didn't support the BDS movement, which was the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement against Israel. And you go, right, so what? So I can't have my money to help me rebuild, you know, my life in the southern states of America if I support Palestinian rights in the Middle East. And they were doing that then. So you imagine if they were doing that then, imagine what they can do now. You know, very often when people say they'll never do that, there's always, well, here's a precedent of when they did it 20 minutes ago. So that's what they want to do. And when it comes then to the Great Reset and that whole, you will own nothing and you'll be happy. Obviously, people's instant reaction to that is, no, I won't. I own my house. I work really hard to pay for that house. What do you mean? I'll own nothing. It's my house. So, okay, well, that's not going to work then. They're not going to agree to that. But if you can create such a situation where you destroy people to such a level where you go back to that same man, but the difference is that man now is up to his neck in debt. He's forfeiting on his mortgage. He's lost everything. He can't put petrol in the car. He can't do anything. He's finished. He's screwed. He's ruined. And you go, look, I can wipe you out. This all this debt. I can wipe all this debt out. Like you'll own nothing. You'll own none of this. But you won't have any of the debt, and you won't have any creditors coming to your door, and you won't have this, and you won't have that, and you won't be going hungry. Man, that guy is going to think it's a great idea. That's the long and short of it. Unfortunately, people might think that's stupid, but I think that if people are put in such a desperate situation, they'll agree to that. They'll go, yeah, of course, yeah, all right, fine, and they will almost probably ask for it, to be honest. Here in the UK, they're already trialing universal basic income in Wales, and they're doing it in Northern Ireland as well. They're trialing a social credit system in Rome and in Bologna, in Italy. And as you know, mate, like we're doing this long enough, like looking into this stuff, and when they're trialing something, that's just a way of saying, this is what we're doing. We just have to say we're trialing it, so it's you perceive it to be something new and not something that actually we've long planned and we were always going to introduce.
Yeah. Well, it's, and it's interesting when you say that, and it may not require the motivation of actually somebody being at that level of desperation. When we saw people going out and getting these experimental injections so they could go to the pub with their mates and have a pint. So, if you're,
Exactly.
where's that threshold? Some people are going to cave a lot sooner than others. And you can add Canada to your UBI list. There's federal legislation in place right now. I also have it under fairly good advice that the QR code, the federal QR code, is already tied to a social credit database, which has things such as your vaccine history, your credit, your present credit score. It has your firearms acquisition license, application suspensions or terminations. It's got a series of information there already, which no one was told about, in the same way that nobody was told that the ArriveCan app that they were downloading as a traveler was also a track and trace software. So, at this point, we can't believe anything that anybody tells you, unless you've done some corroborating research to define the reality of it.
Exactly.
So, moving on here, I would say that words are very powerful tools, and as is their syntax. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
Absolutely.
if we look at the term narrative, which seems to have made its way powerfully into the lexicon of the world over the last 24 months, what are your thoughts about this word? Because it seems to be kind of something new that's popped up.
You do hear it everywhere. I know you mention it. I use it all the time. I use it all the time, the word narrative. Because there seems to be, yeah, that's a good point. Actually, that word just seems to have emerged. Yeah, I'm working out now where that's originated from, whether that's been planted, because I use that all the time.
For sure, and now we've applied it to the story, how this is now the evolving narrative, and of course it's also been somewhat weaponized from the official stat, the official news as well, saying there's conspiracy theory narratives, and they're sort of combining or the misinformation, disinformation. So it's interesting because for me, I don't recall that is a very common word, especially in its present application prior to this COVID situation.
No, I think, yeah, now you say that. I mean, I would use it sometimes, whether it would be, like the narrative on Syria or whatever. But yeah, nothing like as often as I do now, or as often as I hear it now. But I mean, it's an interesting word in the sense that there is a blatant narrative, a blatant storyline being played out by your main players. And it's very funny to see how those things all intertwine. Whether it is, COVID, Ukraine, energy prices, everyone looks at them as separate entities, and they're completely connected. Every single one of them just plays into the other, particularly Ukraine and Russia, because Putin and coronavirus are just the new bogeyman. It's nothing changes in terms of the end result, because what is the end result out of Ukraine? Okay, so it's the breadbasket of Europe, right? Okay, so you're going to have food shortages. You're going to have people falling into poverty. You've got fear, fear, fear everywhere. The same things that were coming out of COVID, you know. I mean, I went out yesterday and there was a little village just north of me. And I went through, and there's a big primary school there. And they've just got all this Ukraine stuff all over the fences of this primary school. It's all been made by the kids. I mean, it's beautiful stuff. Don't get me wrong. There's all these, like, it's kind of cool. But it's like, what are they teaching them? Why has a primary school in Derbyshire got a massive giant Ukraine flag across the front of it that's been made by the kids? And, you know, what are those kids being told? I bet they won't be told about the Azov Battalion, that's for sure.
Yeah, and that's, it's an interesting, when you say that, you know, there's this fear theme to all these narratives. And I would also throw in climate change as an ongoing, maybe even the progenitor to the COVID theme, where this is again yet been another weaponized narrative to make people feel less than or dirty or fearful. And again, it's another bogeyman. And you know, what is happening in Ukraine? I mean, I don't think we really know. In many ways, this is almost the inverse situation that we had with Syria, where the West was bombing a country because of its energy import or its strategic importance in terms of energy. And now we have Russia doing the same to a country that, you know, really the rest of us have nothing to do with. But the news media has played a different story. I mean, did you see that same primary school with Syrian flags and artwork when Syria was
exactly
attacked? So it's interesting. There's been a bunch of you know, sort of memes on the internet and Instagram that I've seen over the last little while. You know, it's like, oh, so now you're concerned about Ukraine. Is that what the news told you to do? I mean, it's people are just being led by their noses around.
100%. Yeah, and like Yemen at the minute, ongoing.
Sure.
You know, Saudis are bombing schools and hospitals on a daily basis.
Don't hear anything about it.
No one's bothered. Because the thing is they don't care what's being done. They care who's doing it or who is perceived to be doing it.
Right.
That's the thing that frustrates me so much about this virtue signaling. Yeah. You know, I'll put a Ukraine flag on my Twitter bio. Okay, brilliant. What does that even mean? Does that even mean? Yeah. And they don't know.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. So on a recent trip abroad, I was down in the jungles of Colombia with a couple of my mates from the UK. Both are successful gentlemen, educated, generally talented and bright. But I was shocked to learn that they'd never heard of ivermectin and that both had been reluctantly vaccinated and totally unaware of the potential negative consequences of their choices. Would this be a common thread across the UK?
I find it bizarre that anyone would not at least have some inclination to like that there was some negative impact from the vaccines. I'd be shocked that literally never crossed someone's mind.
And what about the ivermectin as a means of
very little mention? Very little mention outside of social media. So mainstream media won't touch it. Apart from probably, you know, occasionally they might mock something about the how that they, you know, there's been a trial done and it's proved that, you know, these things are useless, you know. But what gets me is that the mainstream media, politicians and stuff, that what they can get away with, where there's certain things that if you did it or I did it, you'd be sacked on the spot. You know, you go clear your desk, you're done. And one of the biggest ones here was when, you know, the whole thing launched in March 2020. No one really knew what was going on. And people going, look, get some vitamin D down your neck, get some vitamin C down your neck, zinc, iodine, magnesium, you know, exercise. Let's just, you know, no one knows what's going on here. So let's just concentrate on what we can control. And that is our immune system. This is what we should do. And so the media ignored that. I mean, I got fact checked on Instagram for saying that vitamin D boosts your immune system. I mean, I just thought that was common knowledge, but there you go. But Matt Hancock, who was the health secretary at the time, was finally probed on it by the media. They said, you know, they said it more politely than I would said it, but it was basically, from the beginning, you've said when the vaccine's ready, when the vaccine's ready. You've not actually given anyone health advice. You're supposed to be a health minister. You're not giving anyone health advice of what they can do to boost their immune system. And there's a lot of people talking about vitamin D, doctors, eminent doctors talking about vitamin D, blah, blah. So Matt Hancock sort of throw away, goes, yeah, we're conducting a major study currently. And the results of that will be ready soon, blah, blah, blah. Right, next question. Sort of just kind of dodges it a little bit. So then a couple of 3 weeks go by, and the same journalist, I'm pretty sure it was the same journalist, but either way, a journalist, then probes him again at a press conference about this vitamin D study. And he says, yes, we got the results from the vitamin D study. There's zero evidence that it will do anything to boost your immune system or protect you from getting ill. Right. Okay, next question, right? So everyone like with a brain is going, well, that's nonsense. Like they must have flawed, they must have, scammed the test then. They must have scammed the thing if they're showing that. Anyway, it transpires a couple of days later, and this came out in the mainstream media as well in the UK. A couple of days later it comes out, there was never a study. There was never a
Wow.
study. Didn't happen. Never he never commissioned one, and they never did one. So I'm looking at it going, well, he's sacked then, isn't he? He's obviously sacked on the spot. You've just lied to the public. And not only have you lied to the public about doing the study, you've told the public that it's not going to help them. So how many people watching that will go, ugh, stop taking the vitamin D supplements then. They're not cheap. I don't have to buy any more of them then. And then what happens later down the line? Do you know what I mean? And but he kept his job. And in the end, he lost his job for snogging a woman in an office. It's mad what people can get away with or have got away with the last couple of years.
Well, so that's interesting that you say that because, clearly the scientific information prior to 2020 really showed that, it's quite obvious what vitamin D's role is in the immune system. And our federal health minister at the time, Paddy Hadju, was questioned by one of the few two or three dissenting MPs in Ottawa at the time. I think it was either April or May of 20. And Derek Sloan, who actually didn't was up for re-election and got turfed, asked the question of the health minister, why haven't you suggested something about vitamin D? And her response, which is now part of the parliamentary record, was, I would encourage the member not to spread fake news that he's heard from the internet. And next question, please. So interesting to compare and contrast, what's happening between our two countries. But it seems like again, there's this playbook that they're following by somebody else's edict. In complete opposition to reality. So that's interesting
Exactly.
information there. And as well, sorry, and as well the suppression of ivermectin. I mean, I was a little bit shocked that these gentlemen had never come across the information, but now hearing what you have to say, I mean, again, it's another suppression of that information. And in Canada, and I'll ask you what's happening in the UK, there really are no treatment protocols for COVID other than the doctors are eager to get you onto a ventilator to earn their bonus. And that's kind of it's to the point where if they actually find patients, families are smuggling ivermectin into these hospital rooms, and it's being thrown out by the doctors if it's being located. And in the U.S., kind of state by state, it's different in terms of what sort of care you receive. But again, it's sort of and I had COVID myself last November, and I d wasn't able to get any ivermectin until about halfway through, and within 24 hours my condition had radically improved. So it's definitely something that's helpful and probably would have avoided a majority of these deaths, as would have vitamin C. I mean, I think we saw some research that 8 out of 10 COVID mortalities or severe outcomes were vitamin D deficient people.
Yeah, and obese as
Sure,
well. That
sure.
was a large, and that was another thing that was never said. Here in the UK, in March 2020, they shut everything down. All the gyms are shut down. All the play parks are shut down. All that stuff. But you could still get a drive-through McDonald's, and it just doesn't make any sense if it's about health. The whole thing's mad. Here in the UK, once you test positive, and you're in the hospital for whatever. It's remdesivir they stick you on here. I'm pretty sure that's the same in the US. And all remdesivir will do, we'll just shoot your kidneys to pieces. And I've had this conversation with people that I know whose family members have gone down that route. and they've said, they died, blah blah blah. They were put on remdesivir, and I go, I'll stop you there. Did they have acute kidney failure on the death certificate? Well, yeah, they did. That's weird. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Yeah, because it's a drug that kills them.
Yeah. Well, and you know that in November of 19, remdesivir failed its clinical trial as an Ebola drug because it was too toxic. And then come, whatever it was, March, April, or April, May of 20, Fauci digs it out and says it's the cure-all for COVID, which of course, if it's not good for Ebola, why on earth would you give it to somebody with the flu? I mean, that's just madness.
Absolute madness. Unless, the idea is to not have, is to not save them. I mean, I wonder if the Biden administration is trying to create enough dead people to get him reelected.
Oh, if he gets reelected, then that's the end of the world, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean,
That's.
I can't see how they have him stand again, if I'm honest, because, I mean, he'd get battered, surely. I mean, I know, you see on social media, I know social media is not real life, but even pronouns in bios on Twitter are calling for the head of Joe Biden. He's literally lost the room.
And in some ways, I do have some sympathy for the man because I think, number one, if that's the Democrats' best hope for president, they have a serious problem. And, the man is clearly, he was never a good man to begin with. I mean, when you look back at some of the things that he said in the past, I mean, he was a clown to begin with, but now he's a senile, barely functioning old man. And it's to me, it's elder abuse. I mean, he's making a fool of himself and embarrassing the world. And I think I hope that come the midterm elections here in November, that in 23 we see the 25th Amendment put in place and they get rid of him on a cognitive basis. I mean, I think that's probably the safest thing for the world right now is that he is replaced.
It'd be interesting to see who comes in his place.
Well, I'm not sure that Kamala wants the position. I mean, she's been pretty quiet in the background there. So, who knows? Who knows? So, what's the overall public's life outlook at this point in the UK? I mean, is it are people sort of turning the corner, looking at sort of more hopeful future, or are they settling into the reality of Agenda 2030 on its way?
They're struggling a bit. So last. What day is it today? So Friday last week, I think it was, all energy prices in this country doubled overnight, at least doubled, often went more than double. And here in the UK, there's often been an issue with fuel poverty anyway, particularly among the elderly, because the state pension isn't worth, it's just a waste of time. You work your whole life and then the state just throws you off, don't give a monkeys. Live on toast for the rest of your life, love. So people have a decision to make a lot of the time anyway, which is, do I go hungry or do I go cold? Which one is it in the winter, And so by doubling people's energy prices, I mean, they're not going to have to make that decision anymore because you ain't going to be able to do either. Simple as that. So that's pretty dark. Fuel prices are insane here. It's up to like £1.76, £1.77 a litre. Yeah, people can't afford it, mate. Like, people can't afford it. You think you've had 2 years of an economy decimated where a lot of companies, small companies, medium companies have gone bankrupt. And those that haven't gone bankrupt have had to either lay people off to survive or at least cut back hours to survive, you hold back bonuses. Everyone's taken a hit, basically. Like myself, like, I've not played a gig in 2 years and I've not PT'd in 2 years. I used to PT before all this stuff, not done that in 2 years. Granted, now I could go back to it, but I don't want to. But a lot of those people that I knew that were personal trainers and that were gigging for a living, they didn't do anything for like a year almost, And so everyone's going into their savings to try and survive. And so people are angry as well, mate, and because they're starting to come out with a few things in the mainstream here, stuff that me and you would have been saying in March, April, 2020. That was so it's coming out in the press now that or the way they counted deaths was it was ridiculous. They were overcounting them. It's like you don't say. People here were recorded as COVID deaths when they died from falling off a ladder. I'm not kidding. And so you're like, of course they over-egged it. The average age of a COVID death in the UK is 83 and a half. I mean, we're having a laugh. The average age is about 81, I think. If anything, get COVID, live an extra 2.5 years. It's it you know and but that's starting to come out in the mainstream now, So where people like me and you would look at it and go, well, obviously, there's other people that were sucked in by it that didn't see relatives for months on end, that are now going, hang on a minute, and they're not happy about it, and neither should they be. But I guess the question is, what are you going to do about it? And so with that one, you know, your guess is as good as mine, mate. Like, what are they going to do about it? We've got a pretty cheesed off country at the minute.
Well, that's good. I mean, the one thing that's really disturbed me about Canada, and is actually, my house is now sold and I'm getting out of here before it gets any worse. The population seems to be very apathetic and cowardly. I'm not sure if the same is in the UK. All the soccer hooligans and all the roughnecks. Are all these people compliant for their own destruction? I mean, in Canada, it seems like we have, 5, maybe 10% of the population here, who isn't going along with this. What do you think the percentages are like over there?
England's pretty good, to be fair, mate. Scotland, you know, the big tough hardcore Celts, they bottled it. The Welsh, again, you don't like when I was growing up and I was in punk bands and we were touring. I mean, I used to get you used to get scared sometimes gigging in some of these places in Wales and Scotland and Ireland, you know, because these are tough bastards, like, you know. And then COVID happened, and they all just turned into pussycats. So Scotland's starting to revolt a bit now. They're starting to get a bit cheesed off now, to be fair. But they have been absolutely weak. The Welsh, again, the English were solid as a rock. They were great. The English protest movement mobilized really, really quickly, fueled almost entirely in the beginning by women. I have to say that the men did not do themselves any favors, in the kind of alpha stakes, I must admit. Women, I was speaking at protests all across the country, and nearly every single one of them was organized by women. And you know, all the logistics were sorted by women, the PAs were sorted by women, everything was done by women. And then in the end, like, the men sort of, you know, woke up a bit and came along. But we were going to protests in England that were getting into the 200, 300, 400 thousands by this point, at the beginning of 2021. And at the same time, there were protests in Wales, in Cardiff, the capital of Wales, that were 400 people. And that was the difference. And in the end, in London, I think we got to about 800, 900,000 in the end, in the
Wow.
April of 2021. Yeah. And that was insane. Like, that did something, because when that happened, the UK government policy changed, at least the English version of it. The Welsh and the Scots, they kept all their draconian measures in place, but the English started to lift, because I think they realized that actually, if we don't kind of let a bit of a valve go here, this 800,000 that was only 300,000 a month ago, I mean, you know, they're going to start burning things down in a minute. So they gave us a bit of a release, and then that carried on throughout the year, and then it got to last Christmas, about November time, when Omicron, which sounds like an end of level boss from like Sonic the Hedgehog or something, Omicron suddenly appeared. And the UK government started putting all the fear mongering, all started again, coming out of SAGE, which is the government advisory group, the science advisory group. They're all made up of psychologists, by the way, which no one seemed to ask a question. Why am I being told about a virus by a psychologist? If it was a chiropractor or a dentist, you wouldn't listen. Suddenly, a psychologist got to listen. And so, you know, Omicron's going to come along, it's going to kill you, it's going to kill granny, it's going to kill your dog. But the beautiful thing about English people is we get bored easily. So English people's reaction was, I don't even care. I don't even care. I've had enough now. He can kill granny if he want. I'm bored of it. And they just sort of, that was their reaction. And so the government was then putting out kind of, you know, it looks like we're probably going to have to lock down for Christmas again. We're probably going to have to lock down for New Year's, or maybe we can do, you know, go back to certain rules for New Year. So maybe only bubbles of six or whatever. They was putting all this stuff out there. And everyone, honestly, mate, even those that had bought it and had gone and got their three jabs or whatever, were going, I don't even care, mate. You lock us down, I'm not abiding. Are you abiding? No, neither am I, mate. I'm going to go to my mum's house because I missed Christmas at my mum's house last year. I'm going this year, whether you tell me I can or I can't. And so the government just did so much polling all the time. YouGov polls, change.org polls. There were polls everywhere. where they were obviously trying to get the public opinion. And the public opinion was, we ain't going to do it, mate. We're not going to do it. And so the government backtracked, and they backtracked because obviously, if they lock us down and we ignore it, it's game over, isn't it? Because you've shown where the power dynamic lies, and it's over for the government, and they've got no recovery from that point. So they backpedaled and went, oh, okay, yeah, no, you can have Christmas and New Year, you can have it, as if they give it us. Where it's like, no, mate, we were taking it anyway. But at that same time, where we had our Christmases and we had our New Year's, Scotland and Wales, who didn't fight back really, they were still under rules, and they're still under rules now. There's still rules in Scotland and Wales now, COVID rules, which there hasn't been any here since July. Yeah,
Interesting.
mad.
Interesting.
Is it? I say that to people, you know, when they say, "Well, the protests don't do anything," it's like they do, mate. They really do.
Well, so it's interesting to see and to hear this from you. And of course, the world just witnessed the tyrannical and violent removal and abuse and arrest of the peaceful protesters in a frozen Ottawa city. What emotions or thoughts were stirred in you as you watched and absorbed that news?
Anger. Anger. And it was anger at members of the public that weren't fighting back. You know, like the number of people in Canada that just sit back and let that happen was crazy to me. And it was crazy to lots of people. I mean, Trudeau around the world is hated. I mean, he's hated. I mean, he gets rinsed even in the mainstream news in the UK.
Really?
You know, yeah. I mean, I don't. Did you see a video of him getting rinsed in the EU Parliament?
Yeah,
Yeah.
crushed. He got he, now again. There was 300. I think it's 355 members of the EU Parliament, and three or four spoke directly. But it was interesting that our CBC, the Communist Broadcasting News Service here in Canada, extolled that he had spoken to a full house and received a standing ovation for his speech. And in reality, the I think most people had walked out, and there was maybe 10 or 15 people that were occupying the seats.
People got up and walked out when he started speaking.
Yeah, and that's good. So for me, the sort of final straw about my decision to leave Canada was, in fact, this the response to the truckers' protest. One, the fact that around 100,000 people had contributed, which all of those people were not Canadians, out of a population of 36 million, is a ridiculously small amount. And to me, the moment that that mounted unit worked its way through the crowd. I mean, and obviously they could have been more aggressive. People did get bumped out of the way and so forth. That to me was game on. And the fact that we didn't have, at least hundreds of thousands, if not millions of Canadians in the streets saying that that is totally unacceptable, regardless of what you think, whether you should be vaccinated or not, or the government's protecting you, or whatever it is, when you have clearly peaceful protesters that are now being mowed down by mounted units. There's truckers being removed from their vehicles with tear gas and at gunpoint. That has descended into something that no Canadian should have tolerated. And yet there was almost zero pushback. Essentially, there was zero pushback from that. I have heard that many people have subsequently removed capital from their bank accounts because of the freezing and seizure of many of those accounts. But it's, I'm happy to hear that the average English citizen has had enough and is now a force to be reckoned with by the government or in the government's eyes. But here in Canada, I mean, it's the steamroller that Mr. Dressup and his dark friend there are moving forward is shameful and quite frightening.
Yeah. It's. I must admit, I've spoke to a few people from Canada over the last sort of few months and longer. You know, in doing the Right Now show, and spoke to Josh Sigurdsson the other day. He was in England and he came into the studio here. And he just said, "Canada's lost, man. He's like, it's gone." I mean, he lives in. He moved to Mexico a few years ago, but he's just like, it's done. It's gone.
And that's unfortunate. I mean, that's the reality. And of course, we have the illegal imprisonment of some pastors and political dissidents, which again, to me is number one, it's illegal according to the Criminal Code of Canada. But again, the population doesn't seem to be speaking out about this, and it almost seems like they're happy that, Pastor Artur Palouski's in jail and I'm not. So it's, we've entered a
Yeah.
very strange situation here. So, moving on here, would you agree that there's, sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say, where are you moving to? This would be interesting.
I've got some business opportunities in Texas,
Oh,
which I'll be looking to explore, and ultimately also looking to set up shop in Costa Rica as essentially a fallback position if the world all goes to hell. That's a place where one can survive off the land in a relatively easy fashion. I mean, certainly, I've got a bunch of Canadians up here that think they're going to homestead in the bush and live in a log cabin. But with the coming totalitarian regime, a smokestack in the midst of the woods at some point is going to be the subject of a drone strike. And of course, with the grand solar minimum that we're now approaching, good luck with those winters. I mean, that's just something that some people will be able to make a go of it for a few years, but by and large, that's going to be a really tough go. So, the humans evolved in the tropics and subtropics, and that's where that's where we should be if we're living a subsistence lifestyle. So,
That sounds interesting, man.
And we've got a good little crew of folks that are embarking upon a similar process. So, establishing of a community, and with all the benefits that that also brings forward, including homeschooling for the little ones, and as you indicated earlier today, the what the kids are learning in school is utter garbage. Between
Totally.
the not only the critical race theory and the gender dysmorphia, basically everything else that they're not learning critical thinking skills. It's like you regurgitate what we tell you, and if you're a good little regurgitator, we'll give you a mark, and if you question us, we'll crucify you. So that's not education, that's indoctrination.
No, I agree completely. We're lucky in the sense my wife's a teacher, and so I think we'll almost certainly homeschool. My idea is maybe to let the little one go to primary school for the first couple of years. Make some friends, interpersonal skills, learn to read and write. That kind of stuff. But yeah, then homeschool definitely, definitely.
So would you agree that there's a cabal of select individuals that is presently running the world from the shadows via installed political puppets?
100%, 100%. Yeah, some visible, some less visible. But even on a, I think it goes a lot deeper than Klaus Schwab. I don't think Klaus Schwab is the head of the snake by any stretch of the imagination. But even on his level, because they always tell you, and that's something I learned quite early doors. They always tell you what they're doing. Just looking at Klaus Schwab, looking at World Economic Forum, looking at the young global leaders, looking at what countries they're in and what people they've got in those countries. I mean, like I say earlier, the guy wrote a book called Great Reset. They're not hiding it. They're not hiding it.
Pay attention or you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And are you familiar with the technocracy movement and its control over such organizations as the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations?
Yeah. And the technocracy, movement again is all part of that social credit system that we were talking about earlier. It all comes as part of the same thing. There's a concerted effort at the minute here, I think, to bring down the royal family, and I think they're not that I'm bothered about that, to be honest with you, but I think it will go the same almost for elected officials and things like that in the end, and that you will have this technocracy where experts and scientists and such like are put in the positions that make the decisions, even down on a base level. The World Health Organization signing its pandemic treaty in the last couple of weeks when everyone was looking at Ukraine, that will overrule elected officials in terms of your response for the next one, which Bill Gates is already talking about.
It is frightening, and certainly when you look, as you stated, I mean, they're always tipping you off as to what they're doing. There's what's coming down the pipeline isn't a secret.
No.
And we are presently under a medical dictatorship, under a technocratic type organization where we have these unelected officials like Fauci and Gates that are dictating policy based on their science, which of course is nothing but their rhetoric and their propaganda and their narrative that they're trying to shove down our throats. So you mentioned that Klaus Schwab is probably not the head of the snake. Have you heard of Jacques Attali?
I haven't.
So he's an interesting fellow. He worked with the François Mitterrand French government, and he's got a great quote here that I'll read for you, and I'm sure you'll see some parallels in terms of what we are presently witnessing. So this was from a 1981 interview where Attali says, "We will find something or cause it, a pandemic that targets certain people, a real economic crisis or not, a virus that will affect the old or the fat. It doesn't matter. The weak will succumb to it. The fearful and the stupid will believe it and ask to be treated. We will then have taken care to have planned the treatment, a treatment that will be the solution. The selection of idiots will thus be done its own way. They will go to the slaughterhouse on their own." So, I mean, that I think very
Sounds like
succinctly.
a nice bloke.
But very succinctly, I think supports what we've witnessed. And if this is something that came out back in 1981, a pragmatic thinker has to question, is this all part of a grander scheme, and this isn't a random event?
Oh, 100%. These things are planned decades, if not more, in advance, because everything that leads up to them that seems completely disconnected, even again, going right down to a base level with Trump, with Brexit, in the in our in America and Britain, you tore the population in half, completely tore it in half. You there was no gray area. You literally just bang straight down the middle. You're either with us or you're against us. So you created that divide. You'd thrown in all the race stuff, all the Me Too stuff. So you're then providing cracks in the relationships between men and women, cracks in between relationships of different races, different genders, with all that stuff going on, and then you come and deliver this big bang package at a point where, what better time to try and take away everyone's freedoms when everyone's too busy fighting each other to actually bloody join together and go, I don't give a toss what color you are, I don't give a toss what gender you are, and for the minute I don't care about anything other than we need to join together and fight this. And a lot of people did that, to be honest. When I was talking about the protest movement in England, when you went to those protests, they were every single, literally every single demographic. But often the main population, they're still thinking with their politics rather than the fact that they're having their freedoms and stuff completely eradicated, And I don't think that's by accident. I don't think those things happening in the lead up to it is by accident either.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, and when we bring in a few of these other narratives like climate change, and of course now with the Ukraine conflict, the future here, if this conflict isn't resolved in the next month or two, that there will be very limited planting going on in Ukraine, and moving into the winter, fall and winter of this year, there will be people freezing and starving to death in Europe because the gas taps, or the oil taps, will be shut off from Russia, and through this whole climate alarmism movement, Germany in particular and France, have turned off their nuclear reactors. They've sequestered their coal and their own natural gas reserves. And so, how are they going to be able to respond in time? And certainly, the food, is a critical piece of that infrastructure. And the Romans were well versed on the fact that if you control people's food, you control people. And I think this is where we're headed, unfortunately. And this, it's just everything is evolving in such a level of order that I think you'd be a fool to think these are simply one coincidence after another.
Exactly. And it plays into the climate on the other level of, if that happens, so these gas taps get turned off coming out of Russia and all of a sudden people are freezing to death. Well, that's another reason why we can't be depending on fossil fuels. We need to be going to green energy where this can't happen again. All the stuff,
Yeah.
how it is. They always offer the solution to the problem that they've caused. Which again, we were talking about earlier with the Great Reset. You're trying to create a situation where you make people want it, you make people ask for it. It's like the old protection rackets in the old, East End of London gangster days. It was them smashing your windows in the first place, mate,
Yeah.
before they come and you know what I mean? And it's the same now, for sure.
Exactly the same thing. So, what can the average citizen of the world do to avoid this great reset? take, you know, take actions to prevent or insulate themselves and their family, or is it simply too late and we need to sort of insulate ourselves from the worst of what's to happen and hope that you know, the great reset results in a failure on the behalf of the cabal and something new comes up from it, something new arises from the ashes?
Well, I think it's a battle, and I've seen people talk about it before, between the Great Reset and the Great Awakening. It seems like the two are happening simultaneously. The amount of people that have been red-pilled over the last 2 years is through the roof. And you know, that for me feels like that was almost the risk that the cabal took by coming out from behind the shadows, because the more people saw it, you know, we're at a point now where I know people that are going, do you know what? I don't even know what else is true now. I don't. Maybe there are reptilians, mate. Like, honestly, like, so many people have that, you know, because if you'd have said 2 years ago what was coming, they'd have put you in a straitjacket. So, you know, people are a lot more open to stuff. So that's, you know, fills me full of optimism. But I think it will get dark. I think it will be nasty for a couple of 3 years. And I think that will unfortunately take some people with it. But I also think it will concentrate the minds of others. And a new system and a new way of living will be built off the back of it. It's just a case of, you know, is it their new normal or is it our new normal? Because to be fair, as much as I got ear old grief for saying this in a podcast early doors, I feel like the old normal's probably dead anyway. But that's not me being defeatist, but that's not necessarily a bad thing, because let's have it right. Life wasn't amazing 3 years ago. It wasn't like we were living in utopia and it was like, oh my goodness, like this is dreamland. And then all of a sudden COVID hit, you know, there was a countless amount of issues that within society, and you know, within, I mean, the city I'm in at the minute, Derby, I mean, the homelessness issue here, geez, it's insane. You know, so there's better ways of doing things anyway. And you know, my hope is that from something horrific can come something amazing, you know, that it will concentrate enough minds, draw people together, and maybe being knocked down to such a level that maybe then people will stop looking at nonsense that doesn't matter, like the color of your skin, like what your sexual preference is, and all that sort of nonsense, or even what bloody football team you support, which seems to be an issue for some people. And people, you know, will just get rid of those fault lines. They're irrelevant. You know, we're in an issue that's bigger than that now. So let's just concentrate on what we have in common, and that's the fact that we're all human. And we're a human family, you know. That's what I hope anyway.
So, as I suggested to you in my original invitation email, what I'm most interested to chat with you about is the nature of reality and how aware and awake people can navigate what is to come. What's the first thing that comes to your mind when I make that statement?
I've always felt like I chose to be here at this time in history. That's something that's always been real strong in my mind, which gets me through days when you know, because there's been days, don't get me wrong, the last couple of years where I've been like, I am done with this. Like, I am so done with this. And then I remind myself that, you know, I chose this. I chose to be here. I believe you did as well. I believe we all chose to be here in this time in history to do what we're doing now, to make a difference, to try and make things better. So that's what I think when you say, like, in terms of nature of reality, you know, I believe that we are bigger than just this spacesuit that we're in at the moment. Excuse me.
A little bit of sickie still there.
Yeah.
So that's a very profound and powerful statement, Gareth. Thank you for that. And I think that's something that may provide a bit of solace or strength to people that are, you know, in that position right now of wondering, you know, why is this happening to me now? You know, my life was going along great, and now I've been all this information's been dumped on my lap, and you know, my friends don't believe me. And I've, you know, amongst our little group here and amongst listeners that touch base with me, I mean, the very similar stories of feeling alienated, losing friendships. And yet this sense of empowerment that, you know, but regardless of all these setbacks, I'm still pushing hard to try and make a difference and wake people up. So that's I love to hear you say that. That's great.
Yeah. Once you see it, once you see it, you can't unsee it. You
Yes.
can't. And I understand what you're saying about your friends. And I've got, you know, I mean, with my surname, I'd lost all those mates a long time ago anyway, so it don't matter. But I've got lots of friends that are in that same position. You know, they're like, do you know what? Like, I went out walking yesterday with a friend of mine, David, and he said exactly the same thing. He was like, so many of my friends now I have zero contact with because I have nothing to say and they have nothing to say to me. But I've met X, Y, and Z, X, Y, and Z, X, Y, and Z. It's like, well, then, you know, you've just transitioned, basically.
So would you agree that those that are still battling and fighting the narrative are in effect still entrained by the narrative, and that the only means to really escape the narrative and its effect on your life are to actively create and manifest your own pathway forward?
I do agree with that. I also kind of, for me, how I live is to be the latter when it comes to my own family and my own life and my own existence and the way I see what I want for my future. But at the same time, I have kind of got a sword with one hand trying to sort of battle the narrative at the same time. Because I think the more people we can alert to this, the better the chance we have of beating it.
Okay, for sure, for sure.
Oh, excuse me, jeez. I ran out of water, that's what's done
You want to take a break and grab some more?
me. No, you're right, honestly. I'll
Okay,
do
okay.
one big cough and I'll be fine. There we go.
So,
Okay.
what are you personally doing to create your own pathway forward?
To be honest, it's about my whole life now is about being positive, about having positive thoughts and creating a positive environment for my kids. My wife will verify that I have a past of being a bit of a miserable bastard and focusing too much on the negatives and kind of almost being consumed by them, but then at the same time giving energy to them, you know, almost like watering those plants when you shouldn't be. And so now I'm very conscious of the fact that I don't do that. So I don't engage in arguments. You know, when I get attacked on social media, as one example, in the past, I would go back at people and, you know, either try and prove my point or, you know, fuck off, you know, and just, no, you bring in negative energy, then I just won't have that, and that's fine. And so I just, you know, almost just sail through it, which has made a hell of a difference, I've got to say, mate, in terms of like mentally a big difference for me and for our home life and stuff, me not being sat on the sofa like a miserable sod sulking. So that's the main thing is to focus on the positives and the positives that I have in my life. I've got a very privileged life, two wonderful kids and a wonderful wife and stuff that, you know, I've got no reason to moan. And so that's a real thing for me that's worked a lot is to focus on those positive and those positive relationships that you have with friends and colleagues and stuff like that, because not everything is bad. It's still an amazing world and it's still full of amazing people and amazing things and amazing sights. And you know, being out in the countryside yesterday, like in the Peak District in Derbyshire, like the world's just awesome. It's just we forget that a lot intentionally, because every single day of our lives we're told that the roof's caving in. We're just given a different reason for why the roof's caving in every single day. And so I think sometimes we just need to acknowledge that the roof actually isn't caving in.
And that's hence the nature of the question, because I think when we're entrained and entrapped in the narrative that things are so bad, we miss that going out and like, wow, like, you know, this is an incredible place that we live. There's incredible people. And that, yeah, I mean, there is a lot of shit that's going wrong and going sideways. But if we put too much energy into that and not enough energy into that own creative, positive nature, then you will be trapped down that negative vortex and your life will not be what you want it to be.
Yeah, you become what you fear or you become what you hate or whatever. Definitely. I mean, I remember as a kid, like dad saying, well, as a teenager, dad saying to me, and it makes so much sense now, he was like, you need to find a balance between trying to save the world and seeing how Derby County got on. Derby being the football team that I support. And at the time, it was like, oh, okay. But now I think about it, it's like, that's so true. You know, how Derby County got on in the greatest schemes of the world is irrelevant. But actually, it's not irrelevant. Not really. It's kind of because it's, you know, you can't be consumed by that the whole time.
So, what risks do you perceive that the non-compliant and the non-participants in the new world order will face?
with a bit of luck, just banishment, that'd be fine. I'll take that. We'll go and start our own world and it'd be great. But I think I get the feeling, to be fair, the same as with the mandates and these kind of things over the last couple of years, a lot of these things will be threats and will be hot air. this is what's going to happen to you if you don't comply. And what that will do is that will just get most people to comply, because it did. Like you said, people went out and got jabs, they go to the pub. You know, and then what happened was I didn't get jabbed and I went to the pub. So, you know, but most people complied with it. So I think a lot of it, there'll be threats of X, Y, and Z and blah, 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 which they won't actually carry out, but they will just kind of try and make people frightened enough to comply with what they want. But of course, you know, you're going to have, I imagine, well, they're already doing it, the link between domestic terrorism and conspiracy theories. You know, so I'm sure they will probably try and go down that road. Here in the UK, they're bringing in something now called the Online Harms Bill. Now, how it's touted and sold is that it's protecting your kids. You know, people aren't allowed to send dick pics to your 10-year-old daughter anymore. It's like, well, yeah, obviously that's a good thing, but that's just the cover for what it is. And what it actually is, when you actually read the small print, is it will shut down anything that is perceived to cause harm. Well, that's disconcertingly vague. And so that also includes misinformation, blah, 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 blah. So if you read into it more, you go, okay, well, what that means is anything that you think will cause harm, i.e., something that the state doesn't want the people to know, will come under that umbrella. And so, you know, the whole idea is to shut down the alternative media, but that's the whole point of it. And so they'll, you know, they'll try through various ways and means like that, with big fines and potential prison sentences. But you know, whatever they try and throw at us, it can't be worse than going along with it when you know it's wrong. You know.
And here in Canada, we've got Bill C-10 and C-36, which are very similar type bills. I think 36 decides what is Canadian. So essentially, you know, having a position that I should have bodily autonomy and not receive an experimental medical injection is un-Canadian, and so that's a viewpoint which cannot be voiced. Certainly, you know, I think that's also going to extend to being a climate denier. Will also, you know, just as in on YouTube now, if any of your content talks about, you know, dispelling the climate alarmist myth, you cannot be monetized. You know, and of course, if you speak about anything medically true on YouTube, you're punted as well. So, you know, we already see big tech doing this, and so it looks like the governments are enshrining this in legislation, which is interesting as well. You know, why is the UK arriving at a very similar bill at the same time that Canada is? And again, it, you know, begs the question of, you know, who's whispering in the ears of these politicians to put these bills forward?
Well, exactly. I mean, the big player here in the UK is the Centre for Countering Digital Hate. They're a tiny organisation, you know, 2,000 followers on social media. Just a nothing organisation, but their head, their CEO, a guy called Imran Ahmed, he's a former Labour Party spin doctor and banker, so you know, well qualified. His face is everywhere, talking about shutting down. He's now pivoted to Ukraine, obviously. Before Ukraine, it was vaccine misinformation. Before COVID, it was if you said anything against Israel, you're an anti-Semite. You know, this whole thing. Just, you know, that word again, but wherever the narrative needs to go, his fat thumb-like head pops up. And when you look more into the Center for Countering Digital Hate, they tie into the Center for American Progress, which goes into Podesta. So they're all connected, both sides of the Atlantic. And a friend of mine, who used to do some work for Google a long, long time ago, I was talking to him, and he was saying he still got friends there. So when everyone was getting kicked off social media because of COVID misinformation, well, so like my dad got booted, loads of people got booted left, right, and center. He went to some friends of his in America, in Silicon Valley, and was like, you know, what is the deal with this YouTube mass banning? You know, and they told him that it was coming from the UK.
Interesting.
The banning of even conservatives in the USA, the ban, them getting banned wasn't coming out of American YouTube, it was coming out of the UK. Which doesn't shock me at all, because then you know, it would be involved with this Centre for Countering Digital Hate, who, you know, he talks to the government very often. And now a guy called Damian Collins, who's an MP, Conservative MP, he is a member of Centre for Countering Digital Hate. So they're all tied in to each other, just to try and shut people up. That's all it is.
Interesting.
And you know, like people say, you know, like fact checkers didn't exist until the truth started coming out, and that's That's how I feel about it, really.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And if we get to a full-blown social credit system, certainly Canada is threatening to do here, where you have a digital ID, digital passport, digital currency, it's going to become very difficult for the non-compliant to exist within that system.
Well, exactly. Yeah, because you won't be able to monetize anything, and they can just take you off air. But then it just comes back to a street corner with a bullhorn again. I guess it just goes back to basics, and meeting and sharing literature in the way that people used to. There's always a way to fight back. You just, was it, necessity is the mother of all invention, and that's just what will happen in the end. I mean, in terms of these government legislation, all it is Silicon Valley's wrapped up. They've got Silicon Valley wrapped up all day long. And so when Silicon Valley booted everyone off, they were like, no, it's not denying a freedom of speech because you can go and start your own platform or you can go onto another platform. So people did that. And then the government is now coming in to try and wipe out those platforms. It's clever in the sense, but it's also pretty transparent. It's pretty obvious what they're trying to do.
Yeah. So in a number of your father's books that I've read, his concluding chapter provides a message of hope, and that is that love is the answer. Can we unpack your understanding of this statement?
For how I feel about that is to, love your fellow human beings. And if you do that, then you then look beyond the fault lines and stuff, which would then joins as one. I mean, I remember being a kid, if I was being a pain in the ass, I remember my mum would say to me, "I always love you, but I don't always like you." And it's almost having that kind of thing. It's like, I don't necessarily have to like you guys. I don't have to like your politics. I don't have to like this. I don't have to like that. That's irrelevant. But man, brothers and sisters, I love all of you. And if you can create an environment like that, then we've got half a chance because, there's 7 billion of us. And the only way to control that 7 billion people, and that's the way they've done it for since the dawn of time, is by keeping us fighting with each other and forgetting who we are and forgetting that we're all brothers and sisters and we're all part of one great consciousness and stuff, And I know people hear that and think, oh, it sounds like a hippie thing to say or whatever, but I believe that we are all part of the same thing. And if we could just, let down those ridiculous fault lines or irrelevant reasons to not get on, and join forces, man, we'd be unstoppable, I think.
Well, and I think that's the challenge of this Great Reset versus the Great Awakening, that that is our true calling, that for so long, certainly this more recent iteration of our civilization, we haven't achieved that critical mass of brotherly, sisterly love, and the few continue to oppress the many. And when the many realize that we hold the power, we have the strength because we are innumerous. That's really when things are going to change. And if that change comes about through this acceptance and brotherly, sisterly love, like you say, that is going to be an unstoppable force that crashes across the planet.
Absolutely. And it can happen. I believe it can happen so quickly as well.
Yeah,
Once that
yeah.
dam bursts, man,
Yeah.
you bring this thing down in no time.
Well, and I think, that's why we're also seeing the ratcheting up from the cabal of more and more draconian measures, because I think, as certainly the European protest movement, we didn't see it in Canada, unfortunately, but that movement really gained momentum. And again, when there was old people, young people, people of every color and nationality mixed in, there was that true spirit that was beginning to emerge. And I think that's what we need to kindle and keep moving forward.
100%, because they're terrified of it. They're
Yeah.
absolutely terrified of it. It's why they want to silence it and why they try and smear it. Like here in the UK, when the protest movement was around sort of 10,000, 15,000 at these protests, they tried to smear it and smear it and smear it. And I remember talking at one in Trafalgar Square, and there was a picture on one of the national papers. It was talking about this far right rally. And it was like, I remember looking at the pictures, like, I can literally see two hijabs, right? This is the worst far right rally I've ever seen in my life. And so, people saw through that because other people look the same. It's like there's an LGBTQ flag at the back there. Again, this isn't a far right rally. This is ridiculous. And so they lost the narrative, is that word again? But they lost the room in that, like, because the, and they're frightened. they're frightened, which is why they're trying to shut people up. It feels very much like trying to close, the gate after the horse is bolted. It's too late now. The awakening's on.
Yes, well, that's I'm happy to hear you say that, and that's I think that's the message we really need to be pushing. Messages of hope, and that the news may not be reporting that, but on a consciousness level, that's what's happening.
100%, and like from just day-to-day life, like I live in a little village outside Derbyshire, outside Derby, sorry, and like no one went along with any of the nonsense. Like no one had any of it. No one could be bothered. Yeah, nah, I ain't doing that. And but if you watch the news, oh yeah, everyone's doing this. Everyone, this is what the opinion polls say. Blah, blah, and you actually talk to regular folk in the street, they're like, nah, it's nonsense. Total nonsense. And so they won't go along with it, And what's sad is a vaccine centre not far from me, and just because you mentioned it earlier, like you'd see a handful of people there, all looking the same, all masked up outdoors on their own. But there was one day where it was really busy, and there were young people as well, and they were like spiralling out of there, and there were young people, and it was the day they'd announced that they were going to have vaccines to go into clubs and pubs and stuff. And they went and did it. And then within 2 weeks, they lifted that and said, oh, actually, no, we're not going to do that. Too late. Can't take it out, mate.
No.
I just went, you know what? I brew my own beer. It come around my house. And then, and that's fine. As it happens, I can go to a pub like everyone else.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect. So, some final thoughts here. The use of plant medicines seem to have been a fundamental and intrinsic component of human evolution for at least the last 60 to 80,000 years. Would you agree that the focus of our present civilization on the wakeful, problem-solving state of being and the rejection of altered states as a fundamental component of our present stunted development?
I would say so, yeah. And I would say anything that's promoted by government and big pharma as the positive thing, and anything that is definitely not the positive thing, and anything that they kind of shame and try and point you away from or call, stupid and fake medicine or whatever would probably be the way to go, if I'm honest, because I think everything's inverted. In terms of my experience, I have very little experience with that kind of stuff apart from CBD. Which literally, like, I had brachial neuritis in my shoulder, mate. I mean, I've broken my leg twice, but this pain was ridiculous. And I went to the hospital because I was literally in agony. I couldn't, it was insane. Basically, for anyone at home who doesn't know what brachial neuritis is, normally, if you get a nerve pain, it's caused by something. So they'll fix that problem and it'll stop inflaming the nerve and then you're back to normal. But brachial neuritis, the nerve just flares up and they don't even know why. And it's agony, mate. Honestly, it's just ridiculous. So they put me on all these drugs, which I don't want to take. But you're just in so much pain. I was just like, I don't even care. You can stick heroin in me right now. Like, I'm not even bothered. It was that painful. And I was sat up sometimes at like 3, 4 in the morning watching the New York Rangers on TV while my wife's asleep drinking whiskey, like just to try and take the pain. It was horrific. And in the end, a friend of mine got in touch. Was like, mate, you need to get this CBD stuff. Man, it was unreal. It literally just saved. It saved my mental health because I swear I was losing my mind because it's constant pain, and I was going back and forth to the hospital. They were putting like needles in and sending these electric shocks down, trying to get to the bottom of what was going on. It was ridiculous. And then I had CBD oil for probably a month, and it was gone. And I never felt it again. It just disappeared. And for a while, I'd have letters from the hospital like to come back, for a checkup, trying to get to the bottom of it. It's like, mate, you're all right. You're all right. You've had your chance, So that's my only experience of, plant-based medicine, really. But I honestly, I'd swear by that.
Okay, excellent. And then obviously, the folks among us that are nonconformists and free thinkers and are rejecting the mainstream narrative, I think, are we looking at a spiritual battle of good over evil, sort of light over dark in terms of what's unfolding presently?
100%. 100%. What is behind this is deeply, deeply evil. It comes from a place of absolute darkness. And I believe that humans come from a place of light. And I honestly see that as a good versus evil battle. As much as that might sound like a simplification, I think it's exactly what it is. And I think we're at war. I think the last 2 years have been part of the Third World War. Each one was fought differently, whether it be with muskets or mustard gas or whatever. This is a completely different war, but it certainly is a war on the entire planet. And it's been going on for 2 years. A psychological war for one thing, but also a medical war, with what's happening to people that have taken these jabs and are dropping. It's every single day now on my social media. I'm seeing people going, "Oh, I've seen so-so's just died." It's like the dude's 40. What do you mean? And they just dropped dead. A footballer 2 days ago here, 21, just dropped dead. Since when did 21-year-olds just drop dead? 21-year-old athletes just dropped dead. And they're trying to gaslight that it's the norm. But they started putting signs on buses up in Durham, which is a couple hours north of me, that said kids have strokes too. No, they don't. No, they don't. They didn't, at least. And they're trying to normalize it. And again, if you're capable of doing that to someone, to kids in particular, then you can only be coming from a place of darkness, for sure.
And again, another interesting parallel between what's going on here and there. I mean, we've had similar graphics on our buses, and I think that was in preparation for the pediatric COVID vaccine to prepare parents from stroking children, which obviously has never happened until this point.
Exactly.
Interesting, a lot of people ask, well, if there's this cabal that's running things, they have all the money, they have all this power, why are they doing this? And my answer has been that, that's not something that they particularly care about, that they are actually harvesters of souls, and that they are after this energy that they're creating on the planet, which is fear and anxiety and pain and suffering, as opposed to some physical, tangible product that they're looking to achieve. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, it's a currency to them, fear and death. They get off on it. In the same way that a serial killer does. A serial killer doesn't need to do, well, they don't need to do any of it. But if your job is to go and kills, okay, so say someone kills my wife, I go kill them back. All right, I've killed someone, right? But it's not the same as a serial killer who goes in there and go and has someone in a basement for days and cuts them and does X, Y, and Z. They're feeding on it, they're getting off on it. It's deeply evil. And but to me or you, to a normal person, there's no rhyme or reason for that. That's disgusting. Why would you do that? But if you're that dark and that evil, then of course it makes sense that I'm doing that. It's great. I'm feeding on it. I'm getting off on it. And that's what it's like, I believe, for the people that are supposedly ruling the world. I think they absolutely love despair and suffering.
Because I mean, obviously they understand that fiat currency, number one, they own it and it's not real. So why would they be entrapped in collecting more of something that they own and know it's not real? There has to be something else there that is motivating them with their actions.
Oh, absolutely. And at the same time, creating a situation where people lose their homes, and so they will take that, obviously, the banks and whatever, they will take the home. But I don't think their interest is in necessarily in that. I think their interest is in, okay, I now own that person for one thing, but the other is the fear and despair that comes from those people losing their homes. That's great. They feed on it. I love it.
And then would you agree that the Holy Grail analogy is unfolding before our eyes, and that humanity's focus on endlessly investing one's life energy into the pursuit of accumulating fiat currency has resulted in the decay of our collective kingdoms?
I think the world is eating itself with its own greed. I agree with that. And I remember talking to Patrick Henderson last week. We spoke about this whole Will Smith, Chris Rock slap nonsense. And it's just an example of just how much Hollywood in particular, but that's just an example for the rest of the world, has just fallen into just degenerative shit. Two millionaires slapping each other on a stage in front of the national TV. It's what have we come to? Like, what is going on? It's just idiotic, It's if it just feels like the Hollywood's eating itself, and Disney is.
A giant sideshow.
Yeah, giant sideshow, absolutely that. But it's just an example of what society's become. It's just fallen by the wayside, really. And I think just a lot of people have just forgotten who they are. They've forgotten what it is to be a human being.
So
Because,
how would you recommend that somebody who's sort of at that crossroads of budding awareness and to rehumanize themselves and to detach from the narrative and embrace their humanity?
For me personally, I get out into the country. I just get out into the sticks, often on my own if I can. Otherwise, with the girls and just get out into the middle of nowhere. And honestly, it's like a treatment for me. Like yesterday, my wife had a friend up for the weekend, and they were so I've got two daughters, and she's got a friend up. She was like, "You go out walking, because a bit stressed lately with work or whatever." She's like, "You go out walking." Because obviously we're going to go and do girly stuff anyway, and you will just be an awkward spare part. Like I was like, fine, I don't need asking twice. I'll get out of the house. And so I just went out walking. It was like we only did like sort of maybe 21 kilometers or something like that out in the peaks, me and my mate. And honestly, just totally recharged, totally mentally back in the game. And I feel like a reconnection with the world, basically with the earth and everything, that goes with that. So that's what's always worked for me. I don't know if that works for everyone, to be honest, mate, but for me, just getting out of the city, getting away from freaking 4G and 5G masts and all that nonsense, and just getting out into the countryside and into nature just sorts me out.
Yeah,
I feel connected.
back to being a natural human.
Yeah, back to the state that I should be, as and how we were for the absolute lion's share of our existence was at one, working the land, being part of it,
Yeah, excellent. So, Gareth, what's next on the horizon for you in terms of your truth seeking and research areas?
To be honest, we're about to do the third series of The Walk. So we do a series on Iconic called The Walk, which basically I love walking. And there's lots of TV shows in the UK where you'll have people go out walking and they talk to people along the route, historians or whatever. And they're always, Professor Seamus MacPherson from such and such university giving, the textbook answer on everything. And it was like, I kind of like to get into local legends and all that kind of stuff. So we're going off up to Scotland to learn about goodness knows what. Basically, we do six episodes, different areas of the country, talking to historians and authors and professors, but a lot of people that are just regular folk that have grown up in an area, researched that area, their family is, maybe 10 generations in that valley, and just learning about the history of the place, which, in terms of the what's going on in the world now in the greater scheme of things, might not feel that connected, but for me personally, to go back to where we came from as a species and how we evolved, I think that's important to kind of maybe prepare us for how we deal with the future in a way. So for me, I can't wait to get started on that. We start filming that in the first week of June. And apart from that, just keep doing right now, mate. Every single week, we're getting more and more guests coming in from all over the world. I'm working on a couple of guests this week that are inside Ukraine, which would be great if I could pull it off. But as you can imagine, it's not been easy, because they're behind the line. So it's obviously they don't want to give necessarily where they are away and stuff. So we have to think about that logistically. But yeah, that's what I'm working on.
Excellent, excellent. And then, if listeners are interested to tune into one of your programs, where would I direct them?
So if you go to iconic.com, which is ICKONIC.com. There's a 7-day free trial there at the minute. So you can go sign in, and all the episodes are right now. All the episodes are deep dive, which is a longer version of right now. So I'll maybe have four guests on an episode where you talk for 15 minutes. My mate Rich then takes one of those guests and they talk for an hour and a half, like this, going a little bit deeper. The first two series of The Walk are on there. And then you've got, oh God, thousands of hours of documentaries and films and series on everything from, medicine, big pharma, paranormal, you name it, mate. Honestly, there's everything there. So yeah, people can sign in for a 7-day free trial and check out the channel and see what you think.
Excellent, excellent. All right, well, I'll put that information into the show notes, and in my review of the site is there's a lot of information there. I mean, you could spend hours upon hours digesting a lot of that material. So a treasure trove of information for sure.
Yeah, it's grown really quick. I mean, the idea obviously was to have it subscription based, so there's no ownership. You know, we don't need advertisers, we don't need sponsorship or anything like that, because in our mind, you know, as soon as you're beholden to an advertiser, then you're in their pocket a bit. And you know, if I'm right now, I found a story, so I mate, this story is huge, but it re reflected badly on the sponsor, then you know, are you going to be able to put that on? So it's like we don't want that to happen. So by having it subscription based, is you know, the subscribers fund it and run it basically.
Super, super. And of course, Gareth and his family need to eat, so there's there's no free rides. You want the information, you got to pay for it.
Well, not so much that as the cost of all the staff. Like we've grown, Iconic's grown so much now. There's so many people involved now, which is great. But obviously, the bigger something gets, the you know, the more overheads it has, which is daunting. So my brother runs it. I'm glad I don't, because I'm no interest in that sort of side of it.
Excellent. Well, sir, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a great conversation,
It's been
and I
great.
appreciate your insights. It's great to compare and contrast our two nations in terms of their response and what's going to happen. And I'm very pleased with your sort of message of hope for people, and hopefully some people can take your advice to heart and assist us in bringing about this great awakening instead of the great reset.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. And I'm sorry I was a bit, because we were supposed to do this at an earlier date, and I was a bit of a letdown. I apologize for that. But
Yeah.
it's been a pleasure to talk to you, mate.
Excellent. Thank you so much, sir. And we'll be in touch in the future here. All the
Yes,
best.
definitely.
All
Cheers,
right.
mate.
Cheers. Have a good
Bye.
one. Bye-bye.
Bye, mate.